Welcome back to the program. We talked a little bit last week about this month marking the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. We're going to talk about a remarkable speech that many of you may remember given by Ronald Reagan, the impact that that speech had on the events that led up to the fall of the wall, and many other aspects of that history that may be relevant to some of the problems that we face today. We're going to listen to a couple of minutes of that speech, and then we're going to spend some time talking to my guest, Ramesh Ratnasar. He's the deputy managing editor of Time Magazine. He's the winner of numerous journalism prizes and has written dozens of cover stories for Time about U.S. foreign policy and international affairs. And he's the author of a new book entitled Tear Down This Wall, A City, A President, and the Speech That Ended the Cold War.
We welcome change and openness, for we believe that freedom and security go together, that the advance of human liberty can only strengthen the cause of world peace. There is one sign the Soviets can make that would be unmistakable, that would advance dramatically the cause of freedom and peace. General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ramesh, thanks so much for joining us.
It's good to be with you.
To what extent was Reagan's speech directed towards the Soviets or domestic consumption, first of all?
Well, I think with every presidential speech, there are multiple audiences. And when Reagan went to West Berlin in June of 1987, it came at a time in which he had established and was working toward an agreement and an understanding with Mikhail Gorbachev, the leader of the Soviet Union, on the terms in which the two of them would eventually bring the arms race to an end and set the conditions for the end of the Cold War. I mean, at the same time, Reagan was dealing with challenges from conservatives who believed that he was going too far toward appeasing Gorbachev, and he was doing business with Gorbachev a little too readily. They were highly suspicious still of the Soviets and their motives. And so Reagan, in some ways, was indeed addressing those concerns by making a strong statement that made it clear that the United States was not interested just in arms control agreements, but that if Gorbachev was serious about glasnost and reform and a better relationship with the West, he had to eventually let Eastern Europe go and let the Berlin Wall come down.
What was it that underlied the trust that Reagan had in Gorbachev?
Reagan, throughout his presidency, sought to establish some kind of dialogue with the leadership in the Soviet Union. He had no illusions about the Soviet Union. He believed that the communist system was bankrupt. He believed it was immoral, and he was determined to change it. But he didn't believe you could do that by force. He believed you needed to do it by persuasion. And so what you see him doing throughout the early years of his presidency is reach out to the Kremlin. He sends letters to a succession of Soviet leaders, but doesn't really get anywhere until Gorbachev comes along. I think Gorbachev and Reagan shared, though from very different backgrounds, shared some fundamental principles. One is that they believed that there needed to be a dialogue between the two superpowers. I think both of them had a real fear about the consequences of the arms race, and both feared that the arms race, if it not brought under control, could lead to a nuclear conflict. And so I think the two of them, beginning in 1985, see in each other someone who they can do business with, and whom they see eye to eye with, and eventually that leads to the breakthroughs that we see toward the end of the Reagan presidency.
How important was Margaret Thatcher in providing the predicate for Gorbachev as somebody that the West could do business with?
I think she was very important. Reagan trusted Thatcher. They were very close, probably his closest friend of any Western leader. And before Gorbachev became General Secretary in March of 1985, Thatcher went to Moscow, met with him, was convinced that he would eventually get the top job. And then she went to Washington and told Reagan at Camp David that this is a man we can do business with. I think that was important for Reagan. I think he was still skeptical for several months after Gorbachev became General Secretary. It took some time before he was ready to accept that this was someone with whom he could have a partnership. And I think he did realize that almost from the instant he met Gorbachev in Geneva in 1985.
The speech that he gave in Berlin was one that was controversial even within his own administration.
It was very controversial within his administration for a variety of different reasons. There were a number of objections raised to the original draft that the White House speechwriters gave to the president. A number of his top advisors, including Howard Baker, the chief of staff, believed that the idea of Reagan calling on Gorbachev to tear down the wall was so unrealistic, the notion that Gorbachev would take it down was so unrealistic at that time that it would be unpresidential for Reagan to even say it. Other people felt that Reagan might play into the hands of the hardliners in the Kremlin who were opposed to Gorbachev's reforms by saying tear down this wall, that it would be embarrassing to Gorbachev to do so. And then there were a number of people in the State Department and the National Security Council who objected to some of the rhetoric in the speech, who believed that it was too harsh toward the East German communists and that the West German people who were listening to the speech would be put off by that rhetoric. But ultimately, Reagan basically said, this is the one thing I want to say. I want to say to Gorbachev that he should open the Brandenburg Gate and tear down the Berlin Wall. And once Reagan said that, once the president basically endorsed those lines, there was no way they were going to come out.
What's fascinating is how this speech evolved, essentially, as you write about, from the same speechwriters that created the idea of the evil empire.
Well, the speechwriting office in the Reagan White House really was populated by the true believers, the conservative people who believed that they were keeping the flame of the Reagan Revolution alive. And so they tried to inject as much of that kind of hard-nosed rhetoric into his speeches throughout his presidency, and that the evil empire is a good example of that. The speech that Reagan gave at the Houses of Parliament in 1982 was another example. At the same time, Reagan, throughout his presidency, is moving toward reaching an accommodation or reaching an agreement and understanding with Gorbachev. And so both of those things were acting at any one time on his speeches. The desire to maintain the strong rhetoric of the early years of his presidency while still acknowledging that things had changed in the Soviet Union and circumstances were moving in a direction that would ultimately lead to the end of the Cold War.
Talk a little bit about the theatrics of the speech itself and Berlin at the time.
Well, Berlin at the time was obviously still divided between East and West. It was really the visible staging ground. I mean, if there was no other place in the world that presented such a stark contrast between these two systems, the state-run communist system of the East and the market capitalist democratic system of the West. The White House decided that Reagan would go to Berlin after attending an economic summit in Venice, and the White House advance team, which goes around the world scouting out locations for the president's appearances, decided that speaking in front of the Brandenburg Gate would be the optimal place for them to capture attention and to present a backdrop that people would respond to and remember. The West Germans were deeply nervous about this. They believed that there could be disturbances in the East or people getting too close to the wall trying to listen to the speech. As it happens, the East German government basically blocked off the whole area in front of the Berlin Wall on the eastern side so the people couldn't hear Reagan's speech. But on both sides of the wall, there had been disturbances leading up to Reagan's visit. In the east, there had been protests and clashes between the police and a bunch of East German youths who tried to listen to a rock concert that was taking place in the west. That was one of the biggest revolts or clashes between the people and the government in Eastern Germany since 1953. And in the west, there had been protests against Reagan's visit by leftist groups and anarchists who had been rioting in the streets right up until the early hours of the morning the day that Reagan arrived. So there was a lot of tumult taking place on both sides of the wall, and that's sort of the context in which Reagan arrives to give his speech.
And there were some that believed, although Reagan believed exactly the opposite, that the speech could backfire and that it would harden Gorbachev. In fact, Reagan believed that Gorbachev might actually do it.
That's right. Reagan was someone who really meant what he said. And when he got up there to say, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall," it came out of years of Reagan talking about the Berlin Wall and talking about how it was something that he believed was an affront to human decency and human dignity. He had been talking since the 60s about how the United States should have knocked down the barbed wire that the communists had put up originally to separate East and West Berlin. So it's something he felt very deeply. On the other hand, he also felt that Gorbachev could be pushed to change, and that he could be persuaded to make some of these changes and ease the Soviets' grip on Eastern Europe. It happens over time, and whether Gorbachev responded directly to Reagan's speech, I think, is debatable. But clearly, Reagan was trying to encourage Gorbachev to keep moving forward with reforms and keep opening up the communist bloc. And eventually that's what he does in 1989, when communist power starts to crumble all over Europe. Gorbachev's great contribution to the world is that he didn't try to intervene to stop that, and he allowed democracy to take its course and eventually to bring down the Berlin Wall itself.
Do we know from Gorbachev or for any of the records that have come out post-Cold War what his immediate reaction to the speech was?
You know, he hasn't talked about it a whole lot. The interviews that he has given, which he's been asked about the speech, he's merely said that it was, you know, a part of the usual theatrics from the United States, that Reagan was a good actor and it was a good line, but it didn't have any real impact on his thinking. But I do think that the speech was part of this dialogue that Reagan was establishing with Gorbachev. And I think Gorbachev has said that that was extremely important to him and had a great impact on what he did. Reagan was going about assuring Gorbachev that the United States did not have an interest in a war with the Soviet Union. The United States wanted better relations with the Soviet Union, and that gave Gorbachev the space to make a lot of the changes, the cuts in military spending, the decision to get out of Afghanistan and then withdraw from Eastern Europe. These were all things that I think he did largely because he received those assurances from Ronald Reagan.
There was almost this kind of kabuki theater that went on, in that there was the public dialogue that went on between the two of them, and then the private dialogue that went on in the channels of diplomacy.
That's right. I think both sides, and this was true throughout the Cold War, there was a battle of propaganda, essentially, in which neither side wanted to be seen as the weaker side. Both sides wanted to put themselves forward as the leader. I think Gorbachev and Reagan, while they may have in public at times played to that notion of a contest, I think they both believed that the ultimate goal was not for one person to win or lose, because the notion that there would be a winner and loser was so dramatically fraught with danger because of the existence of nuclear weapons, that both of them believed that the goal was to end the Cold War, not to win it. And that's something that you never heard Reagan or Gorbachev talking about a winner or loser in the Cold War. They simply said it was time for it to come to an end, and that's what they set out to do.
One of the things about this speech is that the timing of it, as you write about, was so impeccable, that it happened at a time in 87 as the grassroots democracy movement in East Germany was really taking root in a powerful way. Is this something that Reagan and the West knew, or was this simply a perfect storm of coincidence?
I think we had actually, to be candid in my assessment, I don't think we had a great sense of what was beginning to develop in Eastern Europe in 1987, 1988. I think the signs of dissent were still relatively small, and the movement against the East German government, I think, had not quite coalesced into what it would eventually would coalesce in 1989. I think a number of people I talked to said that this was a real problem for the United States. We never really could figure out how to take advantage of the Soviets' unpopularity in Eastern Europe. But I think what Reagan did was make it clear, even if we had very little ability to affect events in a real way in Eastern Europe, I think Reagan made it clear that the United States believed that this was not a conflict that would go on forever, and that eventually people would have democracy and freedom in the Eastern Bloc. And I think he kept that idea or that dream alive, and I think that was important. It's always important, I think, for the American president to remind people that there is a better future out there, even if we can't see it at the given time, but that this is something that we believe in and we're working toward accomplishing.
Even that he couldn't see it, or that he didn't have an idea, or the West didn't have an idea, how it would be achieved. I mean, and this is where it creates interesting parallels to the world today, that while we may not know how events will play out, there is an ultimate vision out there.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think Reagan, it's not so much he didn't see it, I think he did. In fact, when asked after the wall came down, is this something you expected to see? He said, yes, I didn't know when it would happen, but I believed and I had confidence someday the wall would come down and those countries would see democracy. But yes, I think it was hard to know exactly how it would happen, and I think what happened in 1989 really was, as you said, a kind of perfect storm, a confluence of many different forces throughout Europe that all kind of compound on each other and sort of interact with each other and eventually lead to these events that I think most people did not anticipate would happen when they did. And that includes, for instance, the Hungarian, the fact that the Hungarians had a change in government and a new kind of reform-minded group takes over in early 1989 and makes the decision to open Hungary's border with Austria. That was hugely important because what it meant is that the many East Germans who'd gone to Hungary on vacation could then basically slip out of Hungary and go into the West. And what you see then is this kind of outpouring of East Germans leaving East Germany and heading through Hungary to West Germany and Austria. And this becomes a pressure that is just irresistible for the East German government. And ultimately, they decided they had to relax their own restrictions on people's travel. And after that, one thing led to another, and eventually people were streaming through the Berlin Wall.
What reservations, if any, did the West German government have about the speech?
Well, I think the West Germans, at least some people in the West German government, believed that it could potentially offend the East Germans, and this was something that many people in West Germany were very nervous about. There was an effort throughout the Cold War to normalize relations between East and West and to move more toward a convergence in which perhaps you would have two official countries, but that the people would have a little bit more opportunity to interact and go back and forth, and that culturally and socially the two Germanies would converge in a way, even if politically they remain separate. But it's important to remember that the leadership, in particular Helmut Kohl, did not subscribe to that point of view. Helmut Kohl always believed that the goal was unification and an end to the division between East and West. And so Kohl was very supportive of Reagan's speech and said so after the fact. And even on the night that Germany celebrated unification in 1990, Kohl phoned George H.W. Bush, Reagan's successor, and said he was speaking in at the Brandenburg Gate in the same spot where Reagan had called on Gorbachev to tear down the wall. So Kohl, even to on that night of probably the most important night of his career, he remembered and recalled Reagan's speech.
You mentioned the true believers in the Reagan speech writing operation, people like Peggy Noonan and Tony Dolan. Talk about how this speech evolved and the young speechwriter who really had responsibility for it.
Well, by 1987, there's obviously been a tremendous amount of turnover in the White House, throughout the White House, and that included the speechwriting office. And so Peggy Noonan, who had written a number of the president's most famous speeches, was no longer in the White House. Tony Dolan, who had been there since the beginning and written the Evil Empire speech, was the head of the speechwriting office, and he assigned it to Peter Robinson, who at that point was only 30 years old, but he'd been working in the White House for several years. He had been a speechwriter for Vice President Bush, and this was sort of his first breakout speech, and he basically decided to go to Europe and go to Berlin itself to do research, as the speechwriters often did in those days. And while he was in Berlin, he, as the story goes, went to a dinner party hosted by some West Berliners, at which the hostess, after a long discussion about the division of Berlin and the significance of the Berlin Wall, said, well, if this character, Mr. Gorbachev, is serious about glasnost, then he can take down the Berlin Wall. And that's when Robinson hit upon the idea that he would include this challenge, that Reagan would call on Gorbachev to tear down the wall. Of course, it then goes through several weeks of revisions, and even Robinson himself didn't originally write it into the speech, and it took some time before the final language that we know today ultimately reached the form that we did.
And how much input did Reagan himself have in that?
Well, in this particular case, it's not clear that Reagan was heavily involved with the writing or the editing of the speech. He was a writer. He did write many of his speeches, especially early in his presidency by himself, but, you know, on his own. He, at this stage, was not doing a whole lot of his own writing, but he still took speeches seriously, and he did meet with the speechwriters and tell them, after reading a draft, that he liked the line about tearing down the wall, and that's what he wanted to say. And again, that's was all that really the speechwriters really needed. If the president had endorsed something, it was very hard for anyone to take it out, no matter where you stood in the administration. And so that was his chief contribution in this case, that he basically recognized that this was the line that would resonate. This was the most important statement of the speech, and that was the thing he wanted to say.
Talk about how Reagan viewed speeches. You say he took them seriously. Talk a little about that, Ramesh.
Well, there's an old story about that Michael Deaver, who worked with the president for many years, used to tell, which is early in his career when they were campaigning for governor in California. They were on a helicopter ride going to a campaign event, and about 10 minutes before they were due to arrive, Reagan basically shut everything down and became deeply and intently serious, and what he was doing was studying the note cards of his speech. Now, this is a speech he'd been given over and over again to audiences. He knew it by heart, and Deaver asked him why he was so serious about studying the speech that he'd given so many times, and Reagan said, "This is my job. This is what I do. You guys take care of all the details, but I give speeches. That's my job. And that's why I take it so seriously." And that was true throughout his presidency. He really believed that giving speeches was one of the most important duties a president had, which is why he spent so much time with the drafts of his speeches, why he rewrote many of them. He often changed the language and sharpened them, and you can see a lot of the evidence of this in the Reagan library, where they keep all of his speeches on file, and you can see how much he marked up the speeches early in his presidency, and almost always made them better because he was a master of concision, making a complex idea simple and easy to understand, and that was his real gift as a communicator.
Do you think Obama understands that same aspect of speech making, the importance of it?
I think Obama also, like Reagan, recognizes how important speeches are and important the rhetoric is. I think what this president needs to do is show that in his speeches, that lay out a set of principles that he believes in and that he believes the country should stand for. And that's what Reagan did throughout his career and throughout his presidency. His speeches really were the places where I think people could find out, okay, this is where the president stands on an issue. And that's what they're there for. That's why speeches can be so powerful and so important, that they can embody and transmit to the public a set of values and principles of the president who delivers those speeches. And I think that's the challenge for President Obama, and I'm not sure he's yet managed to do that, but it is still early.
And is it something that you think should be harder or easier in the current media environment that we live in today?
Well, I think it's more difficult in the sense that you have a much more diffuse audience, and that it's harder for any presidential speeches to reach as many people as they did even during Ronald Reagan's day. The Tear Down This Wall speech was carried by the three major networks live, and that would be unheard of today, I think. Very few presidential speeches outside of the ones delivered in prime time are actually carried by the networks, and even then some of those are not shown. So it's harder. On the other hand, there are more outlets, there are more opportunities for the president to get his message across, and I think the key is really the same, and the challenge is the same, which is using speeches to formulate and condense and really crystallize those core beliefs that you stand for. And that's a challenge for every president, and I think that's the same challenge that presents itself to this one.
Romesh Ratnazar, the book is Tear Down This Wall, A City, A President, and the Speech That Ended the Cold War. It's just out from Simon & Schuster. Romesh, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.